Hello, Susanna Lopez here, actor turned barrister turned broadcaster turned true crime writer and proud member of Sisters in Crime Australia. Welcome to the Scarlet Stiletto Bites podcast. For over 30 years now, Sisters in Crime Australia has supported our women crime writers, both true crime and fiction, and some criminal literary talent has been unearthed. Among many awards, there's an annual prize for short crime fiction, the Scarlet Stiletto Awards. And for those of you who prefer your stories by ear, in 2023 we commenced this podcast series, Scarlet Stiletto Bites, to celebrate the sisters' 30th anniversary. Each story is short, but not always sweet. Expect twisted tales, quirky humour, and a frisson of feminism. Please support us by following, sharing, reviewing, and generally spreading the word. We have no paywall. Let's be frank. Ego, greed, and pride come before a fall. It can make people more vulnerable to scams. But can the scammer be scammed back? Today's story is The Right Place by Liz Fillerle, Scarlet Stiletto Second Prize, 2007. Do you get tired of receiving endless rejection slips from publishers? Want to improve your writing? Want to increase the likelihood of your manuscript catching a publisher's eye? Want to start making real money from your writing? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you've come to The Right Place. The Right Place offers an assessment service for all manuscripts, from poetry to screenplays, short stories to novels. Send us your manuscript and we can show you how you can improve both your work and your chances of finding a publisher. For details about this service, click here. The Right Place also runs quarterly $1,000 to the winner short story contests. This is a chance for you to get your name known in the publishing world, as well as to win great cash prizes. To enter the next contest, click here. I got a commendation in their last contest, Edwina told me smugly. I thought you might like to enter the next one. She had printed out the details for The Right Place's upcoming winter contest. I sipped my latte as I skimmed through the conditions. Maximum length, 3,000 words. Closing date, 30 June. Entry fee, $25 per story. $25, I commented. That's a lot. Oh, the prize money's good, though, Edwina pointed out. $1,000 if you win. $500 if you're second, $200 for third. I grunted. Edwina might well envisage herself becoming $1,000 richer, courtesy of the Right Place Winter Story Contest, but I figured I'd simply end up $25 poorer. I picked up the other short story contest details and entry forms she'd brought along. The City of Kalinda Literary Contest, the Maxton Harrison Short Story Prize. I'm entering both of those, Edwina told me. You know that story I wrote about the woman who left her husband and went to live in the outback? The one that placed third in the competition my local newspaper ran. Well, I've done a lot more work on it since then, and I'm entering it for the Maxton Harrison. She smiled, as if victory was assured. Edwina was always confident, none of the self-doubt of the would-be writer for her. I'd known Edwina for 9 months now. We'd met last September, when we'd both attended a weekend writing course in Dalesford. I'd sat next to her in the Saturday morning session on character development, then found myself one place behind her in the lunch queue. She was a striking figure, statuesque with long, wavy, bottle blonde hair and scarlet-rimmed glasses that matched her scarlet suit and scarlet shoes. Over smoked chicken and pasta salad and coffee, she told me she was 55 and retiring from teaching at the end of the academic year. She'd taught VCE mathematics. "Time for a new career," she said brightly. "I've always wanted to write, but work and life have got in the way. What about you?" What about me? Well, I was nearly 40 and both my kids were now at school, Esme in year 5 and Heath in preps, and I'd found my role as a full-time mum was suddenly at an end. I'd found myself a part-time job in a second-hand bookshop, but like Edwina, I always wanted to write and life had got in the way. "Well, I finally got a few hours to myself," I told Edwina. "Now's the time to start." We then discovered we were relatively near neighbours in central Victoria, Edwina living in Kyneton, while I lived in Gisborne. Edwina suggested we meet up on a monthly basis to support and encourage each other's writing efforts. So for 9 months now, we'd met for coffee and cake in a trendy cafe-cum-bookshop in Woodend, where we swapped manuscripts and discussed our literary progress. Or, in my case, the lack of it. Edwina had begun her endeavours by writing short stories and had already enjoyed some success in competitions. I'd started by trying to write a novel, but while I had, I thought, credible characters and a good plot, I was struggling with word count. I'd reached the denouement with a grand total of 30,000 words. Well, at least 30,000 short of a publishable novel. A couple of meetings ago, I'd been at the point of giving up, and Edwina had suggested that given my taut writing style, I might be more suited to the short story genre. So I'd cut out unnecessary characters and scenes and turned my wannabe novel into a short story. Edwina had read it, liked it, and suggested I enter it in a competition, and now she'd brought me some contest details. I took another slug of latte and wondered whether I really dared enter the story in anything. Edwina was bound to do well in the contests, and I'd feel useless by comparison if mine didn't even rate a mention. At the same time, though, I knew I'd feel horribly guilty if I didn't enter after she'd taken the time and trouble to print out the details. "Dear Leah Crenshaw, we are delighted to inform you that your short story, The Murmuring Surge, has been highly commended in our recent Winter Short Story Contest. You certainly sent your story to the right place to get noticed. Although you didn't win a money prize this time, your entry, and those of the other highly commended entrants, came very close to taking one of the top three places. We hope this will encourage you to carry on writing and have attached to this email an entry form for our upcoming spring contest. We also attach a PDF of a flyer detailing our manuscript assessment courses. We can help you turn almost their stories into winners. Congratulations on being highly commended, and we look forward to seeing another story from you in our next contest. Kind regards, Peter Williamson, Director, The Right Place. P.S. For a full list of winners in our winter contest, click here." I clicked. There was my name on the Right Place website with 6 highly commended writers. Edwina's name appeared below mine among 15 commended writers. I was ecstatic. My first ever short story was highly commended in a national contest. And I'd beaten Edwina. which, as I confessed to my husband John, felt good, given I'd had to listen to months of her boasting about her competition successes. More upbeat about my writing than I had been for months, I started writing the first chapter of a new novel, a sort of mature-age chick lit, in which a woman walked out on her husband on her 40th birthday and set off on a solo tour around the world. About a week later, I met Edwina at the cafe for our monthly meeting. She was already waiting inside, clad in green this time, green dress, green jacket, green-rimmed glasses. Green seemed appropriate given her open jealousy of my success. Not only had my story finished ahead of hers in the Right Place Winter Contest, but she'd failed to make the shortlist in the Maxton Harrison Short Story Prize that she'd been so confident of winning. I don't understand it, she said after congratulating me frostily on being highly commended. The story I entered in the Right Place contest was also commended in the City of Kalinda literary contest, and I'd have thought the standard was higher in that one. It should have done much better in the Right Place one. Well, it's all subjective, I reminded her, pretending to be oblivious to her put-down. Different judges, different likes and dislikes. I never liked The Shipping News, for example, and look how many awards that won. That's my point, she said belligerently. It won lots of awards, all with different judges. Awards and contests are supposed to be consistent. Well, you could say that having the same story commended in two different competitions is consistent, I pointed out. Edwina scowled. I googled that fellow who won it, and he doesn't appear on any lists of finalists in any other short story competition on the internet, she said. Now, that's unusual. Take the City of Kalinda winner, David Montague. His name appears regularly on other contest results lists over the past 5 years. The Right Place have picked someone no other judges have rated. Well, it might be the first contest he's ever entered, I argued. Edwina shrugged and asked me how the rest of my writing had been going. I told her about my new novel. She told me about the latest short story she was working on, and we parted with the usual arrangement to meet again same place next month. And she stalked off back to her car, still simmering over the fact that I'd finished ahead of her in my writing contest debut. A few days later, I once again found myself running out of words for my new novel. My heroine had walked out on her husband, bought the plane ticket, had adventures in Europe, even more adventures in Africa, had finally come out as a lesbian and had met the woman of her dreams, and the happy ending was on the horizon at 37,000 words. What was my problem? I wondered, dispirited. There were plenty of 100,000-word bestsellers with absolutely nothing in them other than inane dialogue. So why couldn't I write less succinctly? Here was another novel that, by culling unnecessary scenes, I could probably turn into a short story. Did this mean, then, that I was a short story writer rather than a novelist? Did other writers of short stories find it difficult to turn their hand to the novel? Curious, I went online to find out. I first googled the name David Montague, as Edwina had mentioned that he placed regularly in writing contests. And indeed, there he was, some 10 placements to his credit in various contests, but no novel. Well, not yet, anyway. What about other winners, I wondered, going to the Right Place website? Edwina had said the winter winner didn't merit a mention elsewhere, but what about previous winners? I went to the results page and googled the name of the winner of the autumn contest. Nothing. I tried the winner of the summer contest, And then the spring winner. Nothing. Nothing. Weird, I muttered. I tried all the names that had finished second in right place competitions over the past 12 months. Nothing. I tried those who had finished third. Again, nothing. And then I tried Googling the money winners from the previous 12 months and found the same thing. But when I Googled those people who'd been highly commended or commended, several names showed up elsewhere. I called John over to show him. Well, that's odd, he said. I wonder if it's some kind of scam. What do you mean? Well, if the money winners don't show up on other writing competition sites, and those who don't win money prizes do, then perhaps the money winners don't actually exist, he suggested. Whoever is running the contest just makes up the author names and story titles for the winners and pockets all the money. While people like me pay $25 and just get given commendations to make us feel good and have another go. Perhaps, he said. There are scams in all walks of life, Leah. Why shouldn't there be publishing ones? I started to feel angry. I'd been so thrilled about my first ever short story being highly commended, and now it was possible that no one had actually even read it. My name had just been put down on a list to encourage me to enter the contest again and part with more money. Well, if we're right, there must be someone we can complain to, get our money back, I said, the police or an ombudsman or trading standards or something. John shrugged his shoulders. The police have got better things to do than worry about you losing $25 in a bogus writing contest. And trading standards? Pfft, I don't know whether they do anything about it or not. You'd need proof that the contest's not genuine for a start. Well, the results of all my Google searches look like pretty concrete proof to me. Oh, well, I doubt if anyone from Trading Standards would want to look at all the searches. You'd probably sound like a would-be writer, miffed, because you're not among the prize winners. You've only lost $25. Cut your losses and move on. Try one of those other contests. But I didn't want to. Being highly commended in the right place contest had been the only thing that had kept me writing. All I had to show for my efforts were two failed novels and a no-money prize in what now appeared to be a spurious contest. Oh, I sighed. All my life I'd had this idea that one day I'd be a writer. But apparently it wasn't to be. For some reason, I couldn't get the apparent writing contest scam out of my mind. There were, I kept thinking, lots of people out there parting with $100 a year to enter the right place competitions. If 100 people entered each one, that was $10,000 a year the right place was making from exploiting people's dreams. And their manuscript assessment service was probably shonky as well. I told Edwina about it the next time we met up. I knew it was dodgy, she said triumphantly. By rights, the last story I entered should have been a winner. No wonder it only got a commendation. They hadn't even read it. She bit into her fruit flan, chewed, swallowed, and said, we should report them, making money out of us in that way. I nodded agreement. But John reckons we'd need proof for Trading Standards to take it seriously. He's right, Edwina said. I think we should try to prove this contest is a con. And how do we propose to do that? Well, we know that the director's name is Peter Williamson, and we know the right place has a P.O. box address somewhere called Wattle Bark Bay. It's in Gippsland, I said. It's a two-horse place not far away from the prom. John and I had bought fish and chips there one night when we were camping at the prom last summer. It consisted of a handful of shops and a pub, surrounded by weatherboard houses on big, barren blocks. On the positive side, it was close to the beach. Well, why don't we go over to Wattlebark Bay for a few days and find out where Peter Williamson lives? We could try to find some evidence that his contest is bogus. Edwina, I replied patiently, the cost of driving to Gippsland and staying in a motel or a bed and breakfast would cost us a hell of a lot more than the combined $75 we've forked out for his scam, if it is one. I sighed. John's right. Probably easier just to cut our losses. Look, said Edwina persuasively, if we can prove these contests are a con, it'll get our names in the papers and suddenly we'll be a lot more marketable. I've written a few crime stories, she continued brightly, and it'll be a lot easier for me to interest an agent in them if I've cracked a real-life crime. Oh, God, this is tedious, said Edwina. It was the first week of October. September 30 had been the deadline for the Right Places Spring Contest, and Edwina and I were on the first of 3 days of sleuthing at Wattlebark Bay. We'd driven there in Edwina's car the previous evening and had hired a cottage near the beach. We'd panicked at first when an exploration of Wattlebark Bay's small strip of shops had yielded a general store, a fish and chip shop, a hardware store and a grog shop, but no post office. But then after driving around the small township, we discovered a standalone set of private post office boxes out on one of the dirt roads. That, we figured, couldn't be better. We could park near it without drawing attention to ourselves, which wouldn't have happened had the private boxes been in the main shopping strip. In the end, it hadn't been Edwina's suggestion of increased marketability that had brought me over to Wattlebark Bay. It had been John's parents offering to look after the kids for the second week of the school holidays down at their place in Apollo Bay. Esme and Heath had liked the idea of a week at the beach with Granny and Pa. And then John had learned he was to go on one of those team-building exercises with his firm for a couple of days during the second week of the school holidays. All that left me with the prospect of being at home alone for a couple of days and, as they weren't my days at the bookshop, being at a loose end. So the idea of a few days in Gippsland seemed a lot more inviting. And now, perhaps because I loved watching whodunits like Midsummer Murders on television, I found myself enjoying the roadside stakeout. But Edwina was already bored. Be patient, I said, glancing at the clock on the dashboard. It's only just midday. We'd been there since 9 a.m. and planned to stay till 5. Well, he might not come at all, said Edwina. He might not even pick up the entries. He has to, so he knows who's entered and who to give commendations to, not to mention bank the checks. Plus there'll be bills and letters to collect. See? Look, someone's coming. A green four-wheel drive pulled up beside the P.O. boxes and a woman got out. She opened a box above the one we'd identified as belonging to the Right Place. Edwina sighed heavily. He might even be on holiday. Oh, come on, what's happened to all your cheerful optimism, I said. The four-wheel drive headed off down the road, sending up a cloud of dust. Look, here comes someone else. This time a Commodore pulled up beside the private boxes and a dark-haired man in jeans and sweater got out. He looked to be in his 30s. He didn't even glance across at us as he went over to the boxes and unlocked. Yes! Yes, this is it, Edwina said excitedly. She switched on the ignition and made a big deal of readjusting her mirrors while the man took out his mail, locked up the box and got back into his car. When he drove off, Edwina followed him. Fortunately, he didn't live very far away and we drove for just a few minutes along the road we'd been parked on, then turned sharply into a side street. The man lived a few houses along there on a large bush block. Edwina pulled up outside the next house. I looked out of the back window and saw the man climb up the steps to his deck, unlock his front door and go into the house. "So what is this street?" asked Edwina. "Well, the sign said Lillipilly Road, and he's at..." I craned my neck to see the number on the letterbox. "Number 3. "Well, what now?" asked Edwina. "Well," I said, "we could creep up to the house, look through the windows and try to see what he's doing with the entries. Maybe record it if we can," I added, pointing to the DVD camera. "We'd be spotted," Edwina protested, horrified. "Well, you would be," I responded with a grin. Today, Edwina was a vision in blue. Blue dress and jacket, blue shoes, and inevitably, blue-rimmed glasses. As I was sensibly inconspicuous in jeans and long-sleeved black T-shirt, I grabbed the DVD camera from the back seat, slung it around my shoulder and crept up to the house. I felt like a TV show PI, and I hoped Peter Williamson didn't have a dog. I couldn't see anyone through the front windows, one of which looked into an untidy living room, the other into an equally messy bedroom, so I made my way quietly around the side of the house and found myself gazing into a kitchen. Peter Williamson was sitting at the cluttered kitchen bench, his back towards me, opening his mail. I crept a little closer and put the DVD camera to my eye. I watched and recorded as the director of The Right Place opened 3 envelopes, detached the first page upon which the competition rules stated writers had to give their contact details and the check from each story. He then dropped the actual stories into the bin. Even though I'd guessed this was what was going on, I felt fresh anger now that the evidence was before me. This man had conned me into having false expectations about my writing, just so he could make a fast buck. Aware that the longer I stayed, the more likely I was to be spotted, I stepped away from the window and made my way back towards the car. But I must have made more noise than I thought, because as I was walking across the drive, the front door opened and Peter Williamson appeared on the deck. "Did you want anything?" he called. I turned round. "Sorry," I said. I've come to the wrong address. I was looking for number 13. "Further up," he said, frowning and pointing up the road. I thanked him and hurried back to Edwina's car, wondering if he'd actually rumbled me with the camera. Oh, well, I thought. I couldn't help it if he had, and now I had the evidence. "How'd you go?" asked Edwina. "Okay," I said. I told her what I'd done and about how he had confronted me at the last minute. "Oh, well," she said brightly. "Looks like our work here is finished. Let's go and have some lunch and a drink, shall we, while we work out what to do next?" We ate at the pub in Wattlebark Bay's main strip. The food was basic but good, and it had James Squire on tap, a bonus. "I think we should contact Trading Standards with our allegations and DVD footage," I said. "Why don't know, said Edwina. "I've been wondering..."
"Wondering what?"
"Well, wondering whether we should challenge him with this and see if we could make some kind of deal with him." I eyed her suspiciously. "What sort of deal?" "Well, what about he gives us prizes in this current contest in exchange for our keeping quiet about what we know?" I'd always known that Edwina was ambitious, and up till now I'd found her determination to succeed admirable. She worked hard at her writing, putting a lot more hours a day than I ever managed. I didn't always like her pushiness, but I recognised that this was the world we lived in. Self-promotion got you places. But this suggestion brought her right down in my estimation. "I don't want a prize in his contest," I said quietly. "I want him exposed for what he is."
But if our names appeared as winners, it would look good on our CVs. And we could warn him that he has to do honest judging in future contests. Otherwise...
Otherwise what?
I responded curtly. You make that kind of deal with him, Edwina, and you'll be as caught up in the scam as he is, and in no position to make further threats. Anyway, I thought you said exposing the crime would generate good publicity for your writing. Well, yes, it would, Edwina concurred, uncomfortable with my sudden hostility. Forget I mentioned it, Leo. It was just a thought. When we'd finished, we headed back to the cottage. Edwina said she wanted to work on polishing one of her stories for a while. Well, after spending so many hours cooped up in the car, I felt in urgent need of exercise. So I spent an hour or so walking along the beach, thinking all the time about what to do next in terms of exposing Peter Williamson. Perhaps trading standards wouldn't be interested, I thought. But there was always the press. Perhaps one of those literary magazines might be willing to publish an exposé. Or even The Age or The Herald Sun. As I made my way back to the cottage, I noticed that some of the locals were putting out their kitchen rubbish bins and their recycle bins. That meant the garbos were obviously due the following morning, and that gave me an idea. Edwina was still tapping away on her laptop when I left the cottage again, camera on my shoulder. I told her of my plans to look for the stories among Peter Williamson's garbage, photograph them in there so that the date showed up, and remove them if they were in any state to touch. Edwina had liked the idea of gathering further evidence, but wasn't motivated to help. So, taking her car keys, I went off to do the dirty work myself. I pulled up a couple of houses down from Williamson's place. The house was in darkness and his car was missing from the carport. He'd gone out, and I hoped it was for a long time. The bins were on the nature strip. I opened the recycling one first, and I was in luck. Even if Williamson was a con man, he'd still done the right thing and dumped all his papers in the recycle bin. I trained the camera on the stories, then took them from the bin and bundled them into my car. I'd just started driving away when his Commodore turned into the street and into his drive. I smiled to myself and drove back to the cottage. Edwina was in the shower, so I checked the footage I'd taken, then changed the tape, putting the old one into my handbag for safekeeping. Later on, after a supper of fish and chips, I showed Edwina the stories. She read one or two of them, dismissing them as rubbish. Then we left them on the kitchen counter and got ready for bed. I woke at the sound of the front door closing and sat up, bleary-eyed. Edwina had gone out. I heard her car revving up outside. I got up, hoping she'd gone to buy us some breakfast, but I had a sinking feeling when I went into the living room and realised that the stories we'd left on the counter were missing. A quick check of the DVD camera confirmed that the tape had gone. Edwina had obviously gone to Peter Williamson's to cut a deal. I checked my handbag and took out the tape. I played it back in the DVD player attached to the TV. It was the one with the footage. So Edwina hadn't cottoned on and swapped them around. She'd gone to Williamson's with a blank tape. I smiled, then put the tape back in my bag. Taking the bag into the bathroom, I showered, then got dressed and waited for Edwina to return. "You were out and about early," I said brightly. "I've been to visit Peter Williamson," she told me. "I know you didn't like the idea, Leah, but it was worth trying, I thought, to cut a deal with him instead of running to trading standards who really wouldn't be interested. He's agreed that future competitions will be judged honestly." "Oh, yeah?" I said.
"Well, we'll have to trust him on that, I guess," she said. "But I've come away with prize money from the spring contest." She produced two checks from her pocket. I thought it was best I had first place, she said. After all, I have placed well in a few contests. So it makes sense, given my track record, that I'd finish ahead of you. So I'm first and you're second, but we'll pool the prize money. $1,500 between us, that's $750 each. That's fair. Here. Oh, you can count me out, I said. I don't want any money. Are you sure? She asked me. I've given him the tape, Leah, in exchange for not exposing him. Well, I'd rather have exposed him, I said, but you can certainly keep all the money and tell him he needn't give me second place. I'm not interested in a placing. I'm through with writing fiction. I don't think it's my forte.
Really? She said, trying to mask her delight.
In her eyes, one less would-be writer in the world trying to gain a publisher's attention was a good thing, I guess. Really?
Well, you may be right, though I don't think you're a bad writer, she added generously. I don't think you're cut out to be a novelist.
I didn't think I was either. But I could write clear, concise stories. And I thoroughly enjoyed the little bit of sleuthing I'd done over the past 24 hours. When Edwina disappeared into the bathroom, I took the tape recorder from behind a cushion and slipped it into my pocket. I could see the article now. Short story contest scam and the pretend win by a would-be writer who helped uncover it. I grinned, longing to be home so I could phone a magazine editor. I was glad Edwina had introduced me to the right place. My new career as an investigative journalist had just begun. The end.
Thanks so much for listening. We'd love to get your feedback and we'd love to reach more listeners. Our website is sistersincrime.org.au and our email address is admin@sistersincrime.org.au. Until next Friday then, when we bring you another scintillating story from Australian women crime creators.